possibility thinkers and possibility achievers. When you set high standards and take actions congruent with those standards that you've thought about, you'll enjoy success and bliss. As English philosopher and physician John Locke once said, "I have always thought the actions of men the best interpreters of their thoughts." With the seeds firmly planted in your brain, it is much easier to act in a certain way if you are aligned. I know positive thinkers who have won in life, but I also know many skeptical and pessimistic thinkers who have succeeded in life as well. I know some people with tremendous vision who have won, and people with an equally big vision who have lost. I also know some people with limited vision who have succeeded. I know big and aggressive thinkers who have won, and others who are conservative and risk-averse who have won as well. There is no single way of thinking that causes people to be successful, but there is only one way of acting and behaving that can lead to extraordinary results. Become a one more impossibility thinker and a possibility achiever. Reflecting on Martin Luther King Jr. and strength to love. If you know anything about me, you know I believe Martin Luther King Jr. is one of the finest human beings who ever lived. I look to him often with reverence and as a source of comfort and common sense. I want to share this passage from his collection of sermons, Strength to Love, because of its profound impact on me, and I hope it will have the same effect on you as well. There is no finer way to sum up the ongoing challenge of what it means to be an impossibility thinker and possibility achiever than these words. One of the greatest tragedies of life is that men seldom bridge the gulf between practice and profession, between doing and saying. A persistent schizophrenia leaves so many of us tragically divided against ourselves. On the one hand, we proudly profess certain sublime and noble principles, but on the other hand, we sadly practice the very antithesis of these principles. How often are our lives characterized by a high blood pressure of creeds and an anemia of deeds? We talk eloquently about our commitment to the principles of Christianity, and yet our lives are saturated with the practices of paganism. We proclaim our devotion to democracy, but we sadly practice the very opposite of the democratic creed. We talk passionately about peace, and at the same time, we assiduously prepare for war. We make our fervent pleas for the high road of justice, and then we tread unflinchingly the low road of injustice. This strange dichotomy, this agonizing gulf between the ought and the is, represents the tragic theme of man's earthly pilgrimage. Chapter 12, One More Habit. Your net worth to the world is usually determined by what remains after your bad habits are subtracted from your good ones. Benjamin Franklin. Show me your habits, and I'll show you your life. I can predict with a high degree of accuracy the results you're going to achieve based on your habits, because the outcomes in your life are directly related to your habits. Your brain understands the importance of habits because it's an incredibly efficient organ. The brain's DNA is hardwired to protect you by conserving mental energy whenever it can. Saving energy means that the reserves can be applied to other parts of your life where more brain power is needed. What does that have to do with habits? Your brain is constantly trying to save energy. This is an important point to understand because it directly relates to how to build and change habits and why you even have habits in the first place. Habits are a direct result of your brain subconsciously taking actions in a way to ensure that you'll use less energy to get a desired outcome. With habits, your brain already knows what you need to do, and it switches into autopilot mode, much like setting a car on cruise control to create maximum fuel efficiency. Think of how many times you've awakened in the morning and gone through your favorite routine of grooming, getting dressed, and eating breakfast. If you have a set schedule, there's a good chance that most days you've sleepwalked through all these tasks before fully realizing you're awake and ready to start your day. You know that jolt, the first moment of morning clarity, and it rarely strikes you when you first wake up. You got to that point in the day because your habits carried you through. Here's the kicker. Several studies have shown that most of the actions you take are habits. Some people drink 2 cups of coffee by 8 a.m. without fail. Other people eat lunch at precisely the same time every day. Golfers have an exacting routine when they swing a club, and people who go to the gym often do so on the same days of the week and do the same workouts every time. Sometimes these habits are even more specific and more routine, and we're even less aware of them. For example, most people either brush their teeth first or jump in the shower first to start their day. It never varies. How about you? Which do you do first? And how often do you think about it? Let's take it a step further. We'll talk more about triggers further down in this chapter, but for now, when you step into the shower, the water is a trigger that starts a habit of what you do in the shower. Do you start by shampooing your head? Do you grab a bar of soap and lather up your face and then the rest of your body? Do you routinely stand and just let the water run down your back for a minute while you're relaxing or starting to plan your day? I'll bet there's a grooming sequence you go through every day and you don't even think about it, do you? That's a prime example of how habits work. When you get in your car to begin your work commute, turning the car on is a trigger that starts the habit of how you'll drive to work. You may adjust your mirrors, buckle your seatbelt, turn on your car radio, plug in a favorite podcast, and check your fuel level before putting your car into drive and pulling away from your home. Your brain goes into habit mode because you've already driven to work so many times that your brain knows what to do with a lot less active thinking on your part. That single trigger of starting your car initiates a habit that lasts for the duration of your commute to work, saving you a lot of brain energy in the process. Countless types of activities are habits. You don't think about them, you just do them. And many times those habits work out just fine for you, but not always. Sometimes you develop bad habits, and they don't end up serving you well. When that happens, if you want to change your life for the better, pay close attention to your habits and make changes that align with what you want out of life. Be intentional about your habits. Under pressure, you'll always move into a habitual mode in your brain. Habits are reflexive. For example, if you want to maintain a high level of fitness, but you're in the habit of only going to the gym twice a week, and you sneak a lot of junk food into your diet, you're not going to achieve that goal. If you want a close-knit and happy family life, do you schedule a date night once a week with your spouse or private time with your kids? Is there a recurring time in your home where you all gather as a family? Do you have the habit of eating at the dinner table together most nights? Those types of habits are what create a happy family life for you. Perhaps you want more peace in your life, but you don't cultivate the habit of praying, meditating, or going to church. How will you calm your mind if you don't do the things you need to put you in a state of grace? Or if you want to be a great leader but don't actively apply critical principles of leadership in your work and personal life, you'll fall in those areas as well. Getting fired up about living your life well each day is important, but nowhere near as important as having good habits. Octavia Butler put it into perspective this way when she said, "Forget inspiration. A habit is more dependable. Habits will sustain you whether you're inspired or not." Contrary to what you believe and what you may have been told, the biggest separator in life is not motivation or inspiration. It is the habits you create to get you through those days when you don't really feel like doing the things you need to do to be successful. What do you do when you're not feeling great or when it's not your best day? How do you make progress on your projects and goals at those times? It's rituals and habits. Motivation and inspiration come and go, but rituals and habits are constant. Creating positive and effective habits will change your life. The good news is that this can take place with just a few simple steps. There's no need to overcomplicate the process. However, before you can learn how to do this, it's crucial to understand how habits are born, why we rely on them so much, and what happens inside of our brain when a habit kicks in. The science of habits. When you understand how habits are created and why your brain uses them to benefit you, learning how to upgrade your habits makes more sense. Life would be so much easier if we lived in a relaxed state all day long. Instead, often, we live with varying degrees of pressure and stress. This stress can be caused by anything such as paying bills, hitting a pressure shot in a game if you're a basketball player, having a disagreement with your spouse, or attending an important meeting with your boss or a big client. On the other hand, you view these as normal parts of your life. However, in neurological terms, your brain does not distinguish between these events and treats them as threats. When we perceive threats, our brain flips a switch, moves out of thinking mode, and goes into a reflex mode. We react and revert to what we know as a form of protection, and what we know are our habits. In biological terms, in response to a perceived threat, your hypothalamus activates and prompts your adrenal glands to release hormones, including adrenaline and cortisol. Adrenaline increases your heart rate, raises your blood pressure and energy levels. Cortisol is the body's primary stress hormone, and when it's activated, it releases glucose into the bloodstream. That triggers several bodily functions, including alarm systems in the region of the brain that control mood, motivation, and fear. Also, when stress hits, you go into a habit mode. If you don't have the right habits in place, you'll sink into depression, despair, and fear. When this repeatedly happens over a long period, it can lead to chronic anxiety, heart disease, sleep problems, weight gain, digestive problems, and memory and concentration degradation, among others. By contrast, when you engage in positive habits that result in good outcomes, your body produces dopamine. Dopamine creates a sense of euphoria. And this euphoria dials your bodily systems back and conserves energy, which is what your brain naturally tries to do as much as possible. If your habits involve confidence, passion, resilience, strength, and peace, you'll reflexively respond with those emotions when stress hits. Dopamine pathways control the operation of the basal ganglia. Basal ganglia are located near the base or the bottom of the brain. This cluster of nuclei has extensive roles in the brain, including involvement in a variety of cognitive, emotional, and movement-related functions. Here's how all this ties back to habits. Brains can change and adapt as a result of experience. This is known as brain plasticity or neuroplasticity. Neurons are the building blocks of the brain and nervous system. Neuroplasticity means that they can be rewired, develop new pathways, and create new connections. When basal ganglia engage in neuroplasticity, this is how new habits are created. Neuroplasticity is what allows you to learn new things, enhance your cognitive capabilities, recover from strokes and traumatic brain injuries, and strengthen some brain functions you've lost or are in decline. Now, let's take this science and plug it into how you can develop one more new habit. Trigger, action, prize. As a one more thinker, your goal is to create new habits that focus on releasing dopamine and minimize perceived threats that release adrenaline and cortisol. Keep in mind, habits are directly related to your emotions that are controlled by your basal ganglia where emotions emanate. Whether you realize it or not, these habitual emotions control you. So when you reframe your emotions, you also reframe habits. Because habits make up so much of your life, you can make tremendous strides in all areas that you want to improve when you just adjust your way of thinking and develop positive habits. Creating new habits involves three steps: the trigger, the action, and the prize. The trigger. The keys to creating new habits are intentional thought and repetition. To develop these things, the first thing you should do is make a list of the habits you'll need to reach a particular goal. Be specific and write them down. For example, if your goal involves fitness, what are the habits you need to develop? What kind of exercise, eating, protein intake, and hydration habits would you need to accomplish this goal? Then list the habits that don't serve you well related to the goals you want to achieve. You can do this by starting with the emotions you gravitate to under times of stress. Do you get uptight, angry, fearful, tense up, or lose confidence? Those habitual emotions are going to dictate your actions. As you do this, ask yourself, when I'm under stress, will I achieve a better outcome if I'm filled with the negative emotions or more positive emotions, such as calmness, equanimity, and focus? Remember, your brain is constantly trying to find ways to conserve energy. It does this by minimizing the number of choices in your life and replacing them by hardwiring habits into your subconscious mind. When your brain perceives an action impacting you, it's triggered into a response. Your basal ganglia go to work to respond to this action. Whenever possible, habits become the primary response to this trigger. That's why it's important to have proper habits already programmed into your brain. A positive habitual response is more likely to produce a dopamine release. The action. The action you take is your response to the heightened state of alert you're confronted with. Let's say you're a baseball player and you step into the batter's box. Your body automatically treats this as an important situation and recognizes you need to execute this task at a high level. It can't distinguish between playing a game or trying to escape a house that's on fire. It only understands that the external stimulus must be dealt with the best way your brain knows how to do it. To the extent you've developed good habits as a batter, the more confidence you'll have when you step into the batter's box, and your brain and your body will react reflexively. In baseball parlance, you have a greater chance of being locked in, giving you a higher probability you're going to hit the ball well. Let me give you an example of what I often do when I'm working with athletes to help them change their habits and performance. When you're a competitor, no matter what game you play, you're likely to hit a slump sooner or later. If you're a golfer, you're missing easy putts. If you're a basketball player, you're having trouble making free throws. If you're in sales, maybe you've missed a dozen closes in a row. What do? You need to build a new habit. How do you do that? The first thing you need to do is build a new trigger. When I work with hitters in baseball, the first thing I'll do is have them change their trigger. This means the first thing they do when they step into the batter's box is to change the trigger that puts them back into habit mode. For example, instead of tapping the plate once before they get ready to swing, maybe they tap the plate three times. Perhaps I'll have them adjust their batting gloves a different way or take a different number of practice swings. Doing this triggers a new habit. Although these may appear small and inconsequential, when you're intentional about doing them, you move out of the habit that was not serving you well and force your brain into a new thinking mode. Small adjustments are triggers that create new habits that can completely change a plate appearance. Also, understand that hardwiring your brain to develop new pathways requires repetition. Creating the right actions to produce better habits involves practice, lots and lots of practice. You can't expect to do something once and have it become a habit. Depending on what you want to do or change, creating new habits can take several days, up to several months to master. That point was driven home by Mark Twain, who once said, "A habit cannot be tossed out the window. It must be coaxed down the stairs a step at a time." When you're patient and intentional, in most cases, you can develop a new habit in about 30 days. But you can't be lazy about it. You must work hard, think about what you're doing, and where you want to get to before your new habit will become a reality. The prize. This is the payoff. When you create a new habit and use it to accomplish a goal, you release dopamine. This dopamine tells your brain you want to do it again. The more dopamine your brain releases, the greater intensity of your desire to repeat the action. What does the prize look like? The prize could be as simple as celebrating when you reach first base after a good plate appearance. It could be as small as a high five walking out of a boardroom after closing a big sale. Sometimes the prize is the action itself. It could be the home run, the closed sale, or the special look on your spouse's face across the table when you're out to dinner on a date night. Maybe it's quietly relaxing with a glass of wine at the end of a good day when you've accomplished a lot of things that were important to you. When you reframe your trigger and change your actions, your brain responds favorably because you've achieved greater alignment. Instead of battling your brain rewards you. You may be asking yourself, is a prize important? Absolutely. When you give yourself a prize, you create an essential reinforcement for the trigger and the action. You lock in the habit through the chemical reaction you create in your brain. Changing enough habits and getting more prizes is a part of a larger overall enhanced state of being. Each time you put one more new habit in place, you'll be happier because you're more productive in advancing your life the way you were meant to do. At the beginning of this chapter, I told you that these steps would be simple, and they are. Don't overthink how you go about developing one more habit. Create a new trigger, execute a new action, enjoy the prize. Because of the way your brain is hardwired, you're going to constantly engage in your habits. When you create the right habits, you'll save energy and time. Neuroplasticity means that you can accomplish this hardwiring and create new habits in as little as 30 days, the vast majority of the time. Examine your current emotions and intentionally look for ways you can create new habits. Also, intentionally look for ways to eliminate habits that don't serve you well. When you look for one more opportunities to create new habits, you'll find a clear path to a more blissful life. Perhaps most important of all, one more habit could not only change your life, that habit could also save your life. Eating healthy, exercising regularly, getting plenty of sleep, enjoying your hobbies, volunteering in your community, and other similar habits are things that you should actively pursue. I started this chapter by saying, "Show me your habits, and I'll show you your life." I hope that statement makes more sense for you now. Our habits have consequences. If we take control of our habits on a more consistent basis, we'll have a higher measure of control over the results we achieve. That's why it's essential as a one more thinker to understand the science of habits and the need to be intentional with our actions to positively alter the outcomes in our lives. Chapter 13, One More Multiplier. The whole is greater than the sum of its parts, a guiding principle of Gestalt psychology. How often do you come in contact with forces that transcend the tasks at hand, forces that create results exceeding expectations? You may sense you're a part of something special even if you can't put your finger on it. For some reason, the average transforms into something magical. Often, it only takes adding one small thing for this to happen. It can be subtle, or it can be obvious, producing a seismic shift that triggers a tsunami multiplier effect. The dynamics of team chemistry. Change is natural. At times, you'll seek change. At other times, change will find you. Don't fear change. When you accept your new reality, the most amazing things can happen. In a lab experiment, there are control elements that don't change, and there are variables introduced to create different sets of results. The same holds true for your interactions with others. Some parts of your life will have constants in it, and other parts will change, leading you in new directions. Whether you're talking about business, sports, families, or other types of relationships, this is the case. Adding or taking away variables and people changes the team chemistry of whatever you're involved with. Great team chemistry produces a multiplier effect. Bad team chemistry will burn your efforts down to the ground. Good team chemistry requires having the right pieces in the right places. There are few better examples than the 1980 men's Olympic hockey team. Dubbed the Miracle on Ice, Coach Herb Brooks created a new definition for team chemistry by assembling a roster that went on to beat the heavily favored Russians and ultimately won the gold medal. The win was improbable, to say the least. "I'm not looking for the best players, I'm looking for the right players," was one of the more memorable lines uttered by Kurt Russell, who played Brooks in the movie Miracle that followed a few years later. Everybody loves playing with a superstar on their team, but if the high level of talent also brings disruption and upsets team chemistry, then you should think long and hard about whether or not to add that piece to your team in the first place. Good team chemistry requires trust, respect, and loyalty to each other and your team while also pursuing your individual goals. Good team chemistry is all about dividing and conquering tasks and multiplying your victory celebrations. Cooperation and sacrificing the self for the good of the whole means setting aside your ego for a bigger purpose. There is strength in numbers and a common purpose. Ecclesiastes chapter 4, verse 12 tells us, "And if one prevails against him, two shall withstand him, and a three-strand cord is not quickly broken." Understanding team and individual weaknesses and then showing up to work on those weaknesses daily are also critical. Commitment to long-term success is essential. Talent alone will not carry the day. However, when talent combines with these other factors, the resulting good team chemistry creates a one more multiplier effect to produce over-the-top results. Greatness attracts greatness. Let's keep things simple. When a one more multiplier is in play, 1 + 1 = 3. In your business or personal relationships, when you attract the right person who complements and elevates your natural state, the sum of that partnership is greater than the sum of the individual parts. High achievers and fully functioning human beings understand this, and that's why they seek out like-minded people. Greatness can exist on its own, it often does, but smart people know the absolute best results don't happen when greatness exists in a one-person vacuum. An optimal state happens when you challenge greatness. It could be an opposing force or a force that aligns with a singular greater purpose. The entire foundation of marriage is built on alignment. Two become one, but that one is a union that transcends the two people before they joined in matrimony. How many times have you heard this? He makes the players around him better. Those who are one more multiplier seek out worthy challenges and people who will propel them to the next level. Michael Jordan was a stud on his own. But when he joined forces with Scottie Pippen, they formed the core of a basketball juggernaut. You know about Steve Jobs' accomplishments at Apple. You could argue he was destined for greatness anyway, but you can't diminish the counterbalance of partnering with Steve Wozniak. Together, they revolutionized personal computing and built one of the most successful companies ever. Sometimes a one more multiplier reveals itself in a different way. Many people believe the one more piece of the Chicago Bulls dynasty was Coach Phil Jackson. The same can be said for Pat Riley as he led the Los Angeles Lakers to 4 titles during the Showtime era. Don't underestimate a one more multiplier's ability to be an effective recruiter, too. High-level talent wants to work with and be challenged by other high-level talent. They enjoy the competitiveness and camaraderie of being around their equals. They also understand how outsized results are possible when high-level forces combine to create a unified vision. His name is Thomas Edward Patrick Brady, Jr. You know him better as Tom Brady. Thousands of pages have already been written about him, and there's not much I can add to his legendary successes. What I can do is show you how even Tom Brady can go from a centerpiece on one team to a one more multiplier on another team. In 2020, Tom Brady became the one more multiplier for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. With Brady at the helm, the team went from a losing season the year before to winning a Super Bowl in 2021. You may have a hard time thinking of Tom Brady as the one more piece to anything. He was the essence of the New England Patriots dynasty for 20 seasons, racking up 16 division titles and 6 Super Bowl wins. Still, in football, as it is in life, everything has an expiration date. Most guys would hang up the cleats after a run like that, but most guys are not Tom Brady. Against the backdrop of the COVID-19 pandemic, when America was desperate for heroes, Tom Brady became a one more Cinderella story. He ensured his place in football history as the greatest player of all time. Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers raised more than a few eyebrows when the team signed him to a 2-year, $50 million deal. The team had finished 2019 with a disappointing 7-9 record. Management felt they had an excellent foundation to build on, so signing Brady was a calculated risk that created immediacy to their efforts. As it turns out, they got a bargain. Brady brought a warrior mentality that elevated teammates to play some of the best football of their entire careers. Their will to win completely changed with Brady added to the mix. Brady became the ultimate one more multiplier. As he has done throughout his career, Brady also made it clear about what he expected out of his teammates. He's been consistent in his belief that you can't go out and practice average on Wednesday, average on Thursday, okay on Friday, and then expect to play well on Sunday. The stage was set. As multipliers often do, he recruited a ton of talented skill players who wanted to play on a Tom Brady team. Lock in on this. One more multipliers attract one more multipliers. Shortly after signing Brady, the Bucs added Leonard Fournette at running back. They traded with the Patriots for Rob Gronkowski, and they signed Antonio Brown as a free agent late in the season. In the process, the team turned things around and finished 11-5 in the regular season. To me, football is so much about mental toughness. It's digging deep, doing whatever you need to do to help a team win, and that comes in a lot of shapes and forms, said Brady earlier in his career, and that's exactly what he did in the 2020 season. It may not be the first thing that comes to mind, but one of the ways to do whatever it takes is the ability of a one more multiplier to attract highly skilled talent, which is critical when building a championship team. Why was that so important in this case? Because other than Orion's suck-up field goal, Brady and those one mores were responsible for every score in the Bucs' 31-9 Super Bowl win. Here's how stunning Brady's accomplishment was. He became the first pro athlete in any of the four major American sports to win a championship with two different teams after turning 40. He also became the first player in NFL history to defeat three former Super Bowl MVPs in the same postseason, beating the Saints' Drew Brees, the Packers' Aaron Rodgers, and the Chiefs' Patrick Mahomes. Brady bested them all. Tom Brady sets the standard as a one more multiplier by bringing equanimity and an unmatched work ethic, smarts, and an uncompromising expectation of others. He's been quoted thousands of times throughout his career. For my money, the one quote that sums up who Tom Brady is and what he brings to his team is what he said when someone asked him which Super Bowl ring was his favorite. Tom simply replied, "The next one." Adding the right kind of one more multiplier. While undeniably talented, it would be a complete waste to have two Peyton Mannings on one team. Manning needed equally gifted wide receivers to catch his passes. Without skilled receivers like Marvin Harrison, Manning's accomplishments would still be considerable, but would they be legendary? For his part, Harrison didn't do too bad playing with Manning. The 8-time Pro Bowler finished his career with more than 14,000 receiving yards. His 1,102 receptions are second only to Jerry Rice for the most all-time. Of those, 971 were catches from Manning. Together, they own every single major quarterback-to-receiver record. That includes the most touchdowns, completions, and yards. Adding the right kind of one more piece creates a multiplier effect. That synergy usually defines description. Two people or a team of several people in sync with their standards and goals often rise and defeat more talented teams that don't possess those same dynamics. Working with one more multipliers. The one more piece to a puzzle in business, sports, or any team endeavor changes the energy level, interactions, and results at all levels. There is a trickle-down effect when people buy into the leadership a one more multiplier brings to a team. If you manage that team and add a one more multiplier, you'll have greater success if you follow a few rules related to your multiplier. Educate them on the bigger picture. One mores respect clarity and can often contribute to areas outside of their primary responsibilities. Doing so also makes them better team players by default instead of only being interested in personal ego-driven accomplishments. Give them a voice to contribute. Multipliers are natural leaders, even if they are normally internalized and quiet as a rule. Their accomplishments draw others to them. Says Tom Peters, "Leaders don't create followers, they create more leaders." When many pieces of the team take on leadership responsibilities, it lightens the load for everyone. Teammates also respect one more multipliers. They'll listen to a multiplier's input and trust their track record will produce continued positive outcomes. Create a framework of autonomy. Your one more will remain more engaged and productive when they're allowed to make decisions independently when possible. Don't micromanage them. Delegate when possible. If the opportunity presents itself, consider asking your star to mentor others to develop both the star and the mentee. Remove obstacles and let them be the stars at what they do best. Do you have a super salesman who spends too much time tracking down paperwork and submitting mindless reports? Would you put your IT rock star on a human resources policy committee? Do accountants make good marketers as a rule? Strategically place your one more multipliers into places where they'll be the happiest and most productive, and then leave them alone. Challenge them to compete at a high level. That doesn't always come from teammates. Often a coach will challenge a one more player to compete against themselves. If your batting average was 300 last year, what will it take to hit 325 this year? If you made $2 million in sales last year, how can you get to $2.5 million this year? One more multipliers thrive on competition. Give them the tools they need and watch them go to work. As a leader, you need to be sure to check your ego at the door. You must put the team's needs first and strategize how a multiplier can most effectively contribute and impact an overall effort. Be sure to listen for feedback. Recognize the difference between excuses and legitimate issues holding back your one more multiplier and your entire team. Most of all, learn to let go at the right time and when to lead at the right time. Use timeouts, emails and memos, sales meetings, we have to talk discussions, and other communication efforts sparingly for maximum effect. Joining forces with a one more multiplier is a challenging and exciting proposition. You don't get to sit back and be passive once you do. Multipliers won't tolerate it. Bring your best game. You'll need it. And I guarantee the effort will be worth it. Chapter 14. One More Inconvenience. The ultimate measure of a man is not where he stands in moments of comfort and convenience, but where he stands at times of challenge and controversy. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Here's a simple but compelling fact about the way the world works. Convenience and greatness cannot coexist. They are diametrically opposed forces. If you can accept that many of the great things you want in life will be inconvenient from start to finish, you're well on your way to becoming a one more thinker. Inconveniences are the challenges you must overcome to have a shot at accomplishing anything significant. These inconveniences can be anything from getting up at 5 a.m. to make a 7 a.m. meeting with your professor when you're working on your master's degree, or running 75 miles a week to prep for your first marathon, even though your feet are on fire because they're covered with blisters. It could be going through 4 months of morning sickness before you give birth, or putting in 60 hours a week to be the top salesperson for your company. Paying the price of inconvenience is no guarantee you'll succeed. But if you don't inconvenience yourself and confront the difficult things in front of you, you'll have no chance at ending up where you want to be in life. Embracing inconvenience as a way of life. Think about the most extraordinary things you've been blessed with in your life. Chances are they started as something inconvenient. A championship you won, adding 25 pounds of muscle while lowering your body fat by 50%, earning a raise or a promotion at work. You sacrificed some parts of your life to reach these goals. Even if you did so willingly, those sacrifices came with some degree of inconvenience attached to them. However, on the other side of all these amazing accomplishments are the most exceptional memories, events, relationships, and possessions in your life. That's why, as unusual as it may seem, if you want a fulfilling and blissful existence, you must embrace inconvenience as a way of life. Let me pose this question to you. If you have a daily or weekly to-do list, how do you attack the list? Often, to make ourselves feel like we're accomplishing something, we'll do the easy things first. That's because doing the easy stuff is usually recommended and in some cases celebrated. Celebrate if you want, but all you're doing is celebrating being average and ordinary. What if you started attacking your day by doing the most difficult and inconvenient things? Not first things first or feared things first. Start by doing difficult and inconvenient things first. Doing hard things builds character. It separates you from the pack. When you do hard, challenging, and inconvenient things, you'll soon realize your biggest, best, and most amazing dreams are on the other side of the tallest hills you must climb. It's not the correct mindset to put pressure on yourself to do inconvenient things either. You also need to enjoy them. I guarantee you will be a much happier person in the end. Satisfaction and self-esteem come from accomplishing inconvenient tasks. But instead of embracing the inconvenient, most of us avoid it. The unfortunate byproduct is that we never fully realize what we're capable of and who the best version of ourselves is. The relationship between inconvenience and controversy. When you decide to do something great with your life, get ready. You're going to be controversial. Controversy is inconvenient. Inconvenience ruffles feathers. Going with the flow, kicking back, and chilling means you'll never take any heat. You'll never be uncomfortable. You'll never be inconvenienced, but you'll also never do anything great either. If you're a leader of any sort, whether a CEO, a captain of a team, or even a leader of your family, you must challenge those under you to do uncomfortable and inconvenient things as well. It's the only way they'll achieve greatness too. As a leader, it's part of what you're charged with doing. Great leaders are often great mentors. You mentor people by getting them to become one more thinkers and do inconvenient things that will create personal and professional growth. You must create a culture in your company, your team, or your family of doing unknown, demanding, and inconvenient things. If you're diligent in this area, the collective results will be stunning. Now take those short-term accomplishments and apply the variable of time. Think about the possibilities when you stack up 1 month, 1 year, or a decade's worth of doing inconvenient things. When you can build the habit of doing inconvenient things in your life over time, can you imagine how amazing your life will be? The relationship between inconvenience and greatness. Your biggest dreams never materialize if you gravitate towards convenience. Convenience and your optimum health do not coexist. Your ideal relationship is never born out of convenience. If you want to be wealthy, the path to a bigger bank account will be incredibly challenging and by no means convenient. When you live a life of convenience, you're at odds of living a life of greatness. If anything has come to you in a particularly easy way, you may like the result, but you will never savor it as much as something else you had to struggle and fight to achieve. Our minds are not only hardwired solely to seek comfort and convenience. For many of us, we're also hardwired to ease up on the gas when we think we've gotten to where we want to be with some part of our life. We often tell ourselves we only want the best outcomes, and we may even try to design a life that appears to point at a higher level. But in reality, we often create processes to avoid inconvenience and conflict. When we do this, we're steering ourselves towards a life that already exists. To further justify our efforts, we even enlist others to confirm we're on the right path. Those people often collude with us in our self-deception. Don't beat yourself up if this sounds like you. It happens to a lot of people more often than not. We also compare ourselves to others instead of drawing on our own values and capabilities. Mimicking others is an act of convenience. When we become leaders of our own lives, we don't copy anyone. We recognize our journey is ours alone. It's okay to draw on others as sources of inspiration and knowledge. In fact, it's essential. However, you must be mindful enough to know where to draw the line. You must figure out how to cherry-pick the right information and use it to your fullest advantage. That's not to say you shouldn't make your life more convenient. But you must understand the role convenience plays in achieving your highest level goals and setting your highest level standards. It requires fighting your pre-existing habits of working towards convenience and replacing those with habits centered around results. Those results are the end product of thinking about what you value, applying a standard that aligns with those values, and producing an outcome that thrusts you forward to a remarkable and authentic life. Best-selling author Haruki Murakami put it best when he said, "Your work should be an act of love, not a marriage of convenience." If you're only interested in reaching a level of convenience, you'll achieve a lot less than doing whatever it takes when you're committed to a higher level of greatness. Why you need inconvenience in your life. If you're going through something challenging, it may be a sign that you're onto something special. It could be unique or even once in a lifetime. Understand, there is a significant difference between inconvenience and problems. Robert Fulghum, best-selling author of books like All I Really Need to Know I Learned in Kindergarten, explained it this way. Life is lumpy, and a lump in the oatmeal, a lump in the throat, and a lump in the breast are not the same lump. One should learn the difference. Learn to recognize the difference between a problem and an inconvenience. Once you do that, here's why you need that inconvenience in your life. Ask any multimillionaire if getting wealthy was convenient. They may enjoy the challenge, but they'll also tell you it was one of the most inconvenient journeys of their lifetime. If you think it's easy when you're alone at the office while everyone else is partying on a Friday night, or you're bleeding money even though you're working your butt off to try to sell your dream to anybody who will listen, or you're weary from the ongoing daunting task of turning over every stone looking for new clients and prospects, then you've never gone through the struggles and challenges it takes to be wealthy like I did for years upon years. Here's something else we can all relate to. What do you think the response will be if you ask somebody how convenient it was to lose 50, 75, or 100 or more pounds? So many people stay fat for a reason. We all know fat is uncomfortable, but for many people, losing weight is an uncomfortable challenge despite the obvious benefits. Do you think it's inconvenient to get up and go to the gym on those days when you're sore and your muscles ache because you never worked out that way before? How about prepping all your food in advance or fighting off cravings for food you love that is also bad for you? Fast food addictions don't always get the attention they deserve, but many of us stand no chance against the speed, convenience, and taste temptations a Whopper or a Big Mac offers. Even the simple act of drinking a gallon of water a day when you're hooked on sodas is deceptively inconvenient. The point is this: inconvenience is a challenge. Inconvenience is not easy, but in the long run, convenience is a lot worse. Here's the other thing: convenience never lasts. If you don't put in the work, sooner or later, what you got will go away. It could flat out be taken away. Your uninspired, lackluster behavior could cause you to drop the ball, or fate will simply say, enough, and the powers of the universe will put you in a different set of circumstances. Rarely are those circumstances better. One more thinkers do hard and inconvenient things because they understand what it means when they do them. They attack inconvenient things with a sense of urgency. Life becomes more meaningful when you realize after you live a moment, it's gone forever. You can never get it back. And wasted time is one of the biggest crimes you can commit against yourself. Seek inconvenient relationships. You can't navigate this world alone. In many ways, the quality of your life is determined by the quality of your relationships. What do you look for in a relationship? Is it trust, respect, empathy, honesty? Good relationships are built on many foundational pillars, but I'll bet you never thought one of those pillars is inconvenience. The fact is that friendships and loving relationships built on convenience are not quality relationships. The best relationships are not about being by your side only when it's convenient. It's about being there when it's not. When you're in trouble, when you need help. Those close to you will rally around you and be willing to sacrifice some part of their being, even if it's inconvenient for them. You might need money or a shoulder to cry on. Maybe your car broke down and you need a ride to and from work for a week. It could be something as simple as just being a good listener. Recognize the difference between someone who takes time to talk with you when they have free time versus someone who frees up their time to talk to you. See the difference? Over time, relationships of convenience reveal themselves in many ways. But it only takes a single act of revealing ourselves during times of inconvenience that matters the most. Good friends and lovers will tell inconvenient truths, not to hurt you, but to help you. Instead of getting angry, be grateful. Treat truth like gold, even when you are stung by it. Enduring a sacrifice when something doesn't directly impact you is inconvenient. It is also the hallmark of the type of people you want in your life. Sacrifice goes beyond convenience. Responding to another person's inconvenience builds bridges that can last a lifetime. The same applies to your relationship with your God. Faith built on convenience is nothing more than a hollow faith. You'll never enjoy a close and spiritual relationship with your God until you ask for help when it's not convenient. Seek relationships that can withstand the vigors of life and the inconveniences that both sides will need to help with over time. You want convenience? That's best left to a visit to a fast food restaurant for a quarter pounder with cheese. You want people in your life who are glad and willing to accept the consequences of inconvenience. It's a direct reflection of their character and their level of respect for you. Tapping into the right kind of inconvenience. Ask yourself these questions. What kind of life do I want to lead? Who are the people I want in my life? What are my standards for reaching the goals I have? Will you get the answers you want by living a convenient life? I'll save you the trouble of having to think about it. The answer is a big fat no. When you have these answers, you'll be well on your way to understanding how much and what kind of inconvenience you'll tolerate in your life. How will you know if these answers are your truth or not? Simple. The best and most productive people in the world pursue inconvenient things and handle them with a temperament of equanimity. Equanimity is the key. When you can achieve mental calmness, composure, and control, especially in a difficult situation, you will know you have tapped into the right kind of inconvenience. Inconvenience is a direct corollary to the amount of commitment you have. As legendary motivator Ken Blanchard explains it, there is a difference between interest and commitment. When you're interested in doing something, you only do it when it's convenient. When you're committed to something, you accept no excuses, only results. When you accept only results, you are practicing a form of equanimity because you will only accept one outcome. Distractions and a lesser level of performance are stripped away. You are calm and composed because your path is clear. Equanimity is essential when you're doing inconvenient things. Without it, you'll eventually burn out. You can't sustain inconvenient efforts and rise to another level unless you approach life with the right mental mindset. Although equanimity is essential, it can be too much of a good thing as well. Some people are really calm, too calm. They have a ton of equanimity in their lives, but they never try anything difficult. That creates a false sense of equanimity. To be successful, you must combine inconvenience and equanimity. Equanimity is a form of emotional control rooted in your thoughts. Inconvenient deeds are based in your actions. It's not easy. I've struggled with this over the years. I've been pretty good about doing difficult things, but not always with the requisite equanimity. I've succeeded, but with more chaos and stress than was necessary. I'm not alone. Many mega achievers do inconvenient things every day, but they're not happy. To those people, I say this. If you can't enjoy the beautiful bounties bestowed upon you with equanimity, you're not living your best life. Inconvenience is essential, but you must make sure you practice it the right way to achieve the best possible results in your life. Chapter 15, One More and Defining Leadership. If you want to lift yourself up, lift up someone else. Booker T. Washington. The concept of leadership is as old as civilization itself, and I doubt there's a personal development topic that's been studied or written about more. So what does it mean to be a one more leader? As I define it, you are a one more leader if you help people do things they would not otherwise accomplish without your presence. If you can't do that as a leader, there's no need for you. Whether you realize it or not, you're already a leader. At a minimum, you lead yourself. You may also lead your family, employees, teammates, when you practice your religious doctrine, and several other ways. For our purpose, the question then becomes, how can I use the concept of one more to become better at leading others? There are those that make the case that people are born leaders. That may be so, but I also firmly believe that leadership is a learned trait. Everyone has it within themselves to be an effective leader if they decide to work at it. To do this, start by taking a closer look at what the elements of leadership are. The elements of leadership. I've had the honor of being a leader in my family, on sports teams, for multiple businesses, and in several other capacities in my life. What I'm about to share are universal leadership elements that transcend who you are or where you're at in your life, whether you're an athlete, a coach, a parent, or a business leader. These elements include selling a big dream, everyone is born with unique gifts, and six basic needs drive us. Selling a big dream. As a leader, it's critical for you to sell a big dream. Let me illustrate this powerful point. You need to sell a big enough dream so that the dreams of everyone you lead can fit inside the one you're selling. For example, if you're Clemson football coach Dabo Sweeney, you might sell the idea that not only does everyone fit inside the dream could also be historic, one that will be remembered for ages. This could mean going undefeated, having a record number of players drafted in the NFL, or setting other performance marks that have never been achieved before. Giving people a sense they are involved in something historic is a key step in how you build a culture. That culture means that each individual player and everyone connected to the team is involved in a bigger dream, a dream much bigger than they can imagine on their own. Another critical element is that when you work with the people you lead, help them understand that by making history, they are also making a difference in their lives and many other lives as well. Think bigger. Dare to challenge yourself to make history. Talk bigger. Sell others on the idea that the big dream makes a difference. Act bigger. Do the hard work involved with selling the dream and let people see you doing it. Are you catching this? Leadership is about executing small things very well, but thinking and talking about big things repetitiously. Your number one priority is to sell a big dream, and probably bigger than the one you're thinking about now. It must be all-encompassing. As a parent, you must sell a big enough dream so that your spouse and children can see themselves fitting inside the dream you're selling. If you lead a church, your dream must be big enough so that all members of the congregation can fit their dreams and aspirations inside of it. As a business leader, the dream must be big enough so that every employee can also see themselves inside of that dream. If you run a large manufacturing company, you need to sell a big enough dream so you can meet the needs of your customers because you can satisfy the dreams of everyone you lead in that company. There are too few leaders in the world today who sell a big enough dream. You show me any great leader, and I'll show you a leader who is selling a dream that captures the hearts, desires, and emotions of everyone they lead. That dream you're selling as a family leader or a business leader should encompass your values and your vision. A dream is what you stand for, your vision of the future, and the difference you're going to make in the world. Why is that so important? As a leader, you're in a different place than everyone else. As a leader, by definition, you're out in front. You have a different viewpoint and perspective than the people standing behind you. Your job is to tell those people what you see. Tell those people how amazing it's going to be and keep telling them over and over again. It's your obligation as a leader by position alone to effectively do this. From their position, they can't see it as you can. So you must get them to see it from your position. Here's another critical point. Everybody you lead does not have to believe what you're saying. Isn't that crazy? They only need to believe that you believe what you're saying. Too many leaders constantly try to get people to believe what they're saying. That comes across as desperate and weak. Great leaders only need to get others to believe that they believe what they're saying. This is a form of evangelism that I'm going to touch on later. Everyone is born with unique gifts. Each person is born with individual talents and geniuses. I call these unique gifts. Some of these you're born with and some you develop. As a leader, if you identify these unique gifts in people, you can lead them in a way nobody else can. You separate yourself as a leader when you're able to do this. These gifts can be humor, intellect, resiliency, faith, or kindness. Someone you lead may be blessed with mental toughness, honesty, ambition, creativity, generosity, loyalty, etc. The different kinds of unique gifts are limitless. This ability to identify these gifts and then link them to the dream you're selling is critical in your effort to lead people under you. The other thing I've discovered is that for the most part, no one has ever pointed these unique gifts out to them. Typically, people have an innate sense of their unique gifts, but in many cases, they are underutilized because there's been no concerted effort on how to best apply them. Most people never meet a real leader in their life, and as a result, they never fulfill their true potential by tapping into these gifts. To fulfill a person's potential, identify what their gifts are, and then apply those gifts to the cause that stirs their hearts. That's your job as a leader. By validating these unique gifts, what a person has suspected about themselves now becomes their truth. They're filled with more confidence and armed with an understanding of how they fit into an overall game plan. As a result, they'll create more value for the dream and accomplish more than they ever thought possible on their own. Six basic needs drive us. Consider the words of my friend Tony Robbins. The more you understand what somebody wants, needs, and fears, the more you can figure out how to add value. Tony and I are among many who subscribe to the idea that there are six basic human needs. They are certainty, uncertainty and variety, significance, love and connection, growth, and contribution. These are typically discussed in terms of finding your level of happiness, but I want to put them in the context of how you leverage these six basic needs when you lead others. Your goal is also to figure out how to meet these needs for the people you lead. Ideally, everyone wants all six of these basic needs met all the time. In reality, most people tend to focus on two or three that are important to them at a particular time. Let's look at each of these needs. Certainty. People who want certainty in their lives need to be reassured you can provide them with a stable environment. They value safety and an ongoing routine. They fear change and often equate it with some kind of uncomfortable, intimidating process or pain. Suppose you're going to lead somebody when their primary basic need is certainty. In that case, you're going to speak to them differently than you would with somebody who places more value on other basic needs such as significance. Imagine you're able to cast a big dream, identify this person's gifts, and then determine what their most basic needs are. Can you imagine how productive and happy this person is going to be when they value certainty and that's what you give them? Uncertainty and variety. Those who thrive on uncertainty and variety are stimulated by the unknown and change. They fear getting stuck in a rut or doing the same thing every day. They want new, exciting, and different tasks as often as possible. When leading these people, you need to promote the dream. Identify these people's gifts and then put them in positions that give them the type of variety they want. Significance. When people seek significance, they want to know their efforts are valued and important. They want recognition, and often this is more important to them than money. They enjoy the spotlight, and they'll work hard if they know a high-profile reward is attached to their efforts. If you're going to lead people who are significance-driven, you need to flood them with recognition at every possible opportunity. For example, if you coach a team, it's on you to create a culture that promotes significance for the players. If you're a parent, it's incumbent upon you to make sure you praise your children who value significance and recognition. Suppose you're a business leader and you have people in your organization who are competitive and results-driven. In that case, it's up to you to create a framework that links those people's gifts with their primary needs for recognition. Love and connection. Love is the strongest of all emotions. There is a universal need among everyone to feel a connection and closeness to another person or cause. The greatest poetry and music ever created are about love. Wars have been fought for the love of country, and if you ever doubt the power and universality of love, look no further than to a mother or father's love for their children. People who are driven by love and connection want to belong to a cause bigger than they are. Whether you're in business, coaching a team, or in any other situation where you're leading a group of people with many love-driven members, you need to communicate that they are a part of a family. You need to make these people feel that they are accepted, cared for, and loved. Let these people know this often. Imagine leading one or more people who are driven by love and dropping messages of significance or variety on them. Those may be great messages, but you're applying them to the wrong people. Also, don't make messages about your needs. This applies in all cases, but as an example, if you value things such as certainty or significance, you should not be sending out those kinds of messages if the people you lead value love strongly. As a leader, your messages need to be targeted to the people you lead. Growth. Others place a high value on growing their minds, skills, and experiences. You need to meet this need by placing challenges in front of these people and giving them the sense they're growing as part of your organization. This energizes them. They get excited when you ask them to solve problems of increasing magnitude and complexity. If you're a coach, you need to let your players know they're improving their skills. As a business leader, when you're leading someone who values growth, you need to let them know they're growing due to all the hard work they're putting in related to the dream and vision you created for them. Contribution. Others are driven by the need to contribute. Some people feel they're at their best when they help others through their service or expertise to support a cause or a goal. These people are not driven by significance or recognition. They may not care one way or the other about certainty or uncertainty. To feel valued and fulfilled, they need to know they are contributing and making a difference. You need to message these kinds of things regularly. Basic needs can change over time. As a great leader, also understand that each person's needs can change over time. When I was younger, to get the most out of me, you needed to link competition, recognition, and growth to what I needed to do. Throughout my adult life, I've also been fulfilled by a lot of significance and recognition. I've also been blessed with a lot of certainty, variety, and love. However, over time, my needs have evolved. And now, if you're leading me, you need to connect me with the primary need of contribution. That wasn't the case 15 years ago. If you wanted to convince me to come speak to your group, do you know how you would sell me on doing it? You would have to tell me there were going to be thousands of people who are going to love me, cheer, clap, and jump up and down, and tell me what an amazing job I did when I was done because I was very significance and recognition oriented. Now, if you use those reasons as a way to try and convince me to come speak to your group, that wouldn't stimulate me, and I would probably turn you down. But if you contact me and tell me that if I speak to your group, that it would make a huge difference in those people's lives, change the direction of your company, and make a huge contribution, then you will hook me. Do you see the difference of how a different message at a different time would get me to act? My primary basic need now is contribution. It's the reason I'm writing this book. I'm not writing this book so millions of people acknowledge my work, although that would be nice. I'm writing this book because I think it will help change millions of people's lives. I want to help people by helping them meet their most important basic needs. By doing so, I'm meeting my own important basic need as well. To become a great leader, you must look less at who you are and more at the people you're leading. They're the ones you're asking to produce results on your mission's behalf. When they're effective because their needs are met, your needs are being met by default. Everyone in the group benefits. This is true whether you're a parent, a coach of a sports team, a small business owner, or the CEO of a Fortune 500 company. Validate your leadership by setting an example. I want you to remember this. Most things in life are caught, not taught. Most people will learn a lot more in life by watching what you do rather than by what they do when you simply try to teach them. Holding yourself to a higher standard is essential when you lead people. If what you ask other people to do isn't consistent with what you ask of yourself, the people you lead will quickly recognize this and you have undermined your own efforts. Your leadership example starts by consistently reinforcing the big dream and making sure everyone knows they're a part of that dream. Also, take time to figure out what each person's unique gifts are and demonstrate a willingness to make sure other people's basic needs are met. More specifically, always do one more. Show up 1 hour earlier than everyone else in the office. Make one more business contact than everybody else. Put in one more level of preparation for presentations and meetings. Remember, all eyes are on you. Setting a poor example dooms you and your dream to failure. If you're having trouble becoming an effective leader, the first place you should look for improvement is at yourself. You can't ask others to perform at a high level if you can't first ask it of yourself. Now that we've defined what leadership is, let's take a look at how we can put these elements into action. Chapter 16, One More in My 11 Leadership Principles. The test of an organization is not genius, it is its capacity to make common people achieve uncommon performance. Peter F. Drucker. I've defined the elements of leadership and what it takes to be a one more leader. To put those elements into practice, I follow several key leadership principles. By practicing these principles, I produce significant results for myself over the years. You may benefit by incorporating them into your leadership style as well. Keep in mind, because leadership is often a lifelong learning process, this list is dynamic. As I continue to grow, I add and subtract to this list from time to time. Here are the 11 leadership principles I currently practice. Number 1, become an evangelist. According to the Merriam-Webster Dictionary, one of the definitions of evangelist is someone who talks about something with great enthusiasm. The best leaders enroll others in their cause. They are evangelists for their dreams. Much like a shepherd guiding a flock, a great leader is concerned with evangelism in the form of fellowship, discipleship, and service. I've had the privilege of getting to know Steve Wozniak, one of the founders of Apple. Because I was curious, I asked him about what Steve Jobs' gifts were. What was it that made him great? I expected to hear that he was hardworking, resilient, or incredibly intellectually bright, but that's not what he told me. He told me Steve Jobs had an amazing ability to sell the dream, that he was evangelical about Apple's cause, and that evangelism was infectious throughout the company. Evangelism is the transference of the dreams you're selling to those you lead so that you can project infectious energy into the rest of the world. Leading through fellowship strengthens the bond between you, your employees, customers, or family members. Discipleship means you can effectively pass along your beliefs as a leader to those under you. Service and leadership is about meeting the basic needs of those under you. This means recognizing your employees for a job well done or loving your family members regularly. 2. Listen and observe. It's impossible to be a great leader unless you look at the circumstances and people you lead. This ability to listen and observe helps you identify the gifts and talents of the people around you. This can't be done in a void or a haphazard way. You must be intentional and pay focus to even the smallest details. Never think of absorbing these details as an obligation. Think of it as an investment. As a leader, if you can't slow down long enough and take an extra couple of minutes to get into the specifics of the people you lead, then you're leaving a big pile of untapped opportunities and potential sitting on the table. It's one thing to look at a person's resume or see how they conduct themselves in an interview. It's quite another to look beyond formal measurements to fully understand a person's unique gifts. If you're the head coach of a football team, part of what you must do is look at a player's stats to see what they can accomplish on the field. However, you also need to fully understand what kind of a presence they are in the locker room. Are they a positive force who lifts other players up? Do they go all out during every practice? Do they stay late and work hard to improve parts of their game that need more work? Actions speak volumes about the people you want on your team and how you're going to lead them. 3. Wise leaders build other leaders. Wise leaders do not hoard leadership opportunities. Instead, they actively look to grow and develop other leaders. The number one job of a leader is to develop new leaders. Some leaders are intimidated by developing other leaders around them. They're threatened and prefer to keep power in their own hands. They fail to realize that when they build leaders, they lighten their load, create loyalty, and make the overall team stronger. Think about a parent who teaches their teenager to drive. When the child gets their license, they have taken a huge step forward in personal growth. Now they have more freedom, more choices, and can help the entire family by running errands to the grocery store or taking younger siblings to practices or games. As a result, the teen is happier, more independent, and confident when taking on more significant challenges. The family dynamic has been reshaped, and parents are now free to reclaim their time to do other productive and enjoyable things. This is also applicable to business. In fact, one of the key job satisfaction metrics often cited by employees is the chance to advance in a company as a part of a larger career path. Talented employees often leave for greener pastures when they feel like they've stalled out or aren't given a chance to take a more active role as a leader in a company. Teams are no different. You show me any great team, and I'll show you one that is led by great players and great coaches. Think of all the championships that LeBron James or Michael Jordan won as players. Of course, coaches were critical to their success, but it was their player-led leadership that spelled the difference between winning championships or not. 4. Love, believe in, care, and show people how to live better. I learned many of the leadership principles I use today from a bunch of 8 to 10-year-old boys. Shortly after college, I was blessed with the opportunity to work at McKinley Home for Boys as a youth counselor. Little did I know that when I first walked into Cottage 8, my entire world would change. At that time, McKinley was a group home for orphaned or molested boys with parents who were incarcerated or had no other adult who would care for them for various reasons. From my first day, I found myself in a position where all those boys wanted from me was to love them, believe in them, care about them, and show them how to live better. And frankly, I didn't feel qualified to do it at the time. Just like me, many of you probably don't feel qualified right now to be a leader. When you feel this way, draw upon this thought I often reference. God doesn't call the qualified. He qualifies the called. At McKinley, I didn't feel qualified, but I did understand that